Josh Holland joins me on the program. He is an editor and senior writer at Alternet Online at alternet.org. Josh, happy Wednesday. How are you?
Happy Wednesday, Coy. How are you?
I'm very good. I want to start with your most recent commentary, and that was in regards to what we are seeing from President Obama, right and left, perhaps not used to a fiery Obama. We haven't seen that since he was on the campaign trail, and all of a sudden he's making a very fiery speech. And what is this? Is this just politics, or is it policy, or is it a little of both?
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, he has a set of policies that he's pushing. We see this kind of media narrative emerging that this is a new approach. And when you look at the actual proposals, there are, you know, variations of what he's been pitching to the American people for the last 2 years, at least. Some of these things go back to his campaign in 2008. So there's not a great deal that's new in terms of the nuts and bolts of these proposals, but the rhetoric and the campaign kind of style, he's clearly drawing a hard line in a way that he hasn't before. One difference is that, you know, he said many, many times we need a balanced approach to deficit reduction where, you know, the wealthy sacrifice something and there are cuts to spending. This time he said if there's a proposal on his desk that doesn't meet that standard, he's going to veto it. The other thing that he's doing differently this time around is that in the past, if you look at the big legislative things that he's pushed, he's gone and he's laid them out in kind of broad terms, and then he's left the details up to congressional leaders to hammer out. This time he's putting together a specific package, and he's taking it to the stump. He's campaigning for these ideas. I think it's driven by politics, certainly. But the thing is that we're in a very, very bleak economic situation, and we need some of these proposals to pass. So in a sense, the politics where you aggressively kind of call out the opposition for blocking measures that would perhaps spur the economy to some degree can be, you know, not only good politics but also result in decent policies.
We're talking with Josh Holland. The website is alternet.org. Josh, take a moment to reflect on the media narrative coming out of the Washington Press Corps that this is an ineffective president who's been too willing, perhaps, to not just move to the middle, but to camp out in the middle. Of course, the right they have a different narrative that he is, in fact, you know, way, way to the left and dangerous and this kind of stuff.
The wild-eyed socialist, yes.
Right. So reflect on these narratives. Yeah.
You know, this is a media. We have a media, a political media that's obsessed with process. And they find that the arcana of policy, of public policy, these are boring details. They don't excite readers. They're not sexy. So what they do is they really focus on the kind of behind-the-scenes process issues and personal characteristics. How is the president being perceived by his base? How is he perceived by independent voters, et cetera, et cetera? And I think one of the interesting things for me is seeing this narrative emerge that he's, you know, coming out fighting, and this is a brand new approach when, again, these are very, very similar proposals that he's been offering for quite a while. So what it says is that, you know, there is one of those things where you can certainly shape the narrative through your actions when you're president of the United States. You know, there is the sense that he is now stronger because he is acting more aggressively towards his opponents.
We're talking with Josh Holland. It's 5:13 here in Charlottesville. Josh, why is it you think that the representatives or conservatives, not just in Washington but around the country, seem so rabidly eager to keep the most wealthy among us basically paying no taxes at all, because that's almost what it is at this point, with when you factor in the lower rates and the write-offs that they take advantage of, and the fact that they're taxed infinitely lower on capital gains, you know, and not money they actually work for, but just money that makes money kind of stuff. How do you explain this? And I know there's been whole books that have tried to explain this, but I mean,
there are. You know, there's quite an impressive mountain of political science data, which shows that, you know, politicians are extremely sensitive to the interests of the donor class, of people who put money into campaigns. Now, who puts money into campaigns? It's 0.2% of the American public finance our campaign system. So who is that 0.2%? Well, it's not working people. It's not people who have to worry about payroll taxes being the biggest chunk of what comes out of their paycheck. It is people who, by and large, of course there's exceptions, it is by and large people who derive their income from investments rather than labor. And they are very, very happy to have the tax system that they have. You know, we hear about these onerous taxes put on wealth producers and job creators, and we hear charges of class warfare whenever anybody talks about returning to the Clinton era rates. And, you know, the bottom line is, if you look at the historic shift in the tax burden in this country, I mean, there has been a dramatic move to move the tax burden from corporations and the very wealthy to individuals and households who work for a living.
We're talking with Josh Holland of Alternet.org. Pick up that theme now. You also wrote another recent commentary about the class war. We hear that word a lot, and you write that there is indeed a very real class war, and Warren Buffett has even made this observation.
Yes, and the kind of usual response, the progressive response to conservative charges of class war is to say, look, there is that class war, and it is being waged from those above. And, you know, you can look at the statistics about the upward redistribution of wealth that we've seen in the last 30 years. You know, the top one-tenth of 1% took in 1.1% of the national income in 1979. By 2006, they were taking in 5%. Were they five times as smart? Were they working five times as hard? No. That's a result of public policies that redistribute wealth upwards. But I think that there's another way of looking at it, which is that, you know, there are traditional ladders by which people who work for a living can kind of pull their way up the economic pile. You can look at union membership. You can look at the value of an education, a college education. And in many, many, many different ways, the conservative movement in the last 30 years has undermined a lot of these ladders upwards for people who are, you know, trying to get into the middle class or get into the upper class from the middle class. And I think that a good definition of class war is when you've achieved a certain amount of prosperity yourself, and then you pull up the ladders behind you so that others can't achieve similar prosperity.
Why is it you think, and I guess this gets back to the idea of narrative, why is it that this particular narrative, it hasn't really gained the kind of traction in the popular media that we often hear? You know, the conservatives, they scream class warfare if you talk about, having very, very wealthy people pay their fair share of taxes.
Well, Coy, we're terrible at messaging, and they're really good at messaging. I mean, you know, you can cut this up in any number of ways, but I see it again and again and again where conservatives really understand how to appeal to the heartstrings, and they know how to represent things in a very simple-to-understand way. I was arguing with someone the other day, a conservative, who was saying that the flat tax is infinitely fair because everybody pays the same amount of taxes. Well, you know, this is a very easy to understand and I think emotionally obvious or intuitively obvious kind of claim. It's totally, totally wrong. A consumption tax, you know, effectively taxes a billionaire at about 1/50th or 1/100th of the rate of someone making $30,000 a year. It's wildly regressive. But, you know, that takes some explanation. And explaining things, you know, a lengthy explanation is never going to be as effective in politics as something quick that you can put on a bumper sticker and slap on your car.
We're talking with Josh Holland at 518 here in Charlottesville. His website is alternet.org, where he is an editor and a senior writer. Pick up a copy of his most recent book, The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy. Josh, let me ask you about that line from the president's speech where he said, this is not class warfare, it's math. What did that mean to you?
Well, I mean, there has been a promise for many, many years that, you know, the conservatives could cut your taxes, reduce the deficit, not cut any spending, popular programs, not cut any spending on popular programs, and that's mathematically illiterate and illogical. It's not a matter of ideology. There is only so many ways that you can balance a budget, and what I think that he was saying is that, you know, asking people who are very, very wealthy to contribute just 3 or 4% more, as they did under the Clinton tax rates, is about finding revenues to close that deficit. Now, we can disagree about the priority and the emphasis that he's putting on that deficit, but, you know, if you're going to reduce the deficit, it should be a balanced approach, and that is simple math to some degree.
Josh, let me ask you about another recent commentary where you looked at conservatism in America. And you likened it to a kind of religion, a belief that has a religious fervor to it.
Well, you know, I mean, ideology, what's ideology? It provides us kind of a very efficient way of processing information around us. It gives us a philosophical lens through which we can view the world and easily organize information as it comes in. What is a religious belief? Well, it's something that is a matter of faith, and it's impervious to evidence that contradicts it. And when you look at a lot of the beliefs that animate today's conservative movement, which I would say is not really true conservatism, by the way, they are impervious to external reality, to information that contradicts it. And, you know, as I say in the piece, the most obvious kind of low-hanging fruit for this kind of argument is to look at the Republican war on science. Look at climate change. Look at how they vilify scientists, climatologists who actually have expertise in this field, because they're saying something that doesn't fit with what the church's doctrine is, in this case, that global warming is a hoax. I look at another kind of article of faith among conservatives, which is that cutting taxes always results in more revenues. This is something that's such a pure article of faith that, you know, you can go and ask conservative pundits and radio hosts and politicians, and they all agree that cutting taxes always brings more revenues into the government's coffers. But if you go to even conservative policy wonks, you know, economists, fiscal budget experts, none of them say that that's true. They all say that that's absolute nonsense. So it really is a perfect example of an article of religious faith. And the point that I make in the piece is that it's rather dangerous to have a significant faction within one of the two major parties that is now acting in a way that is immune to reason and evidence.
We're talking with Josh Holland. Josh, flesh out for a moment here something you said just a few moments ago when you said, you know, that you would argue that the kind of conservatism we have in America today isn't truly political conservatism.
Well, I think that it's something that we should be a little bit sad to see go. I mean, traditional political conservatism really stressed a take it slow approach. You know, they thought that there was real value in stability and social stability. They weren't set on dismantling, you know, the last 100 years of progress, which it seems like the kind of more reactionary brand of, you might call it Tea Party conservatism, really is. And I think that it's detrimental for our entire system to lose that traditional conservatism. You know, conservatives used to be the ones who would be very cautious about foreign policy. They were the ones who said, we need to have a humble foreign policy. We can't be expected to reshape the world. We shouldn't be deploying troops willy-nilly all over the globe. That was traditional conservatism for many, many, many years. And again, I'm not a conservative myself, traditionally or otherwise, but I think that losing that strain of political thinking is not doing us very well as a country.
Wasn't it the conservative movement in America that brought us the park system and the EPA and, I mean, all of the things I'm thinking of that are now attacked as, like, just raging big government socialism?
You know, I mean, I look at things that were very, very recently, just 10 years ago, considered so-called market-based solutions to public problems. This was an idea that was really embraced by traditional conservatives don't meddle with regulatory schemes, government regulatory schemes. Let the market, the free market, address some of these problems. And the best example is cap and trade. Cap and trade was developed it was first articulated in the Reagan administration. It was advanced by the first George H.W. Bush, and it was something that, you know, these conservative think tanks, corporate-funded conservative think tanks, were all about just a few short years ago. Now, this is considered some sort of pernicious form of socialism. What happened? Well, the policy didn't change. The idea of using the free market didn't change. The conservative movement has gone very, very far to the right. As you say, you know, it was Nixon that brought us the EPA, and Nixon was considered a hard right-winger at the time. I don't know that he would be conservative enough to get the Republican nomination at this point.
I've heard the same thing said about Ronald Reagan.
Oh, Ronald Reagan would never get it. He would be a rhino. He signed an amnesty for undocumented workers. He raised taxes 11 different times. I mean, Reagan would be, he would be polling with Huntsman right now.
Josh Holland is a senior editor, a senior writer at alternet.org. Check him out online. Again, the website alternet.org, and pick up a copy of his book, The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy. Josh, it's always an honor. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Clay.